Hey guys, welcome back. This is Classic Camera Revival for November 2015, and we're in our sort of temporary studio. Hopefully we can do a bit more here. We're in Milton, Ontario, not Toronto. And this month we have done the Mystery Camera Challenge.
Coming to you from Toronto, Canada, this is Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to this show.
Hey guys, welcome back. You're probably wondering what the heck the Mystery Camera Challenge is. So essentially, we all have a lot of cameras in our collection, and we've been talking about ones that we ourselves have owned. So we're a little biased. We talk about the ones we like. So the idea was is that each of us would bring a camera to the table, not tell anybody, we'd draw names, and then that person would use the camera of the person whose name they drew. So we have a great selection of cameras. We just got in from a rather cold, damp photo walk. We had one slight problem, but we're not going to talk about that. So let's get going and let's start with Donna. What camera did you get to use?
So today I got Alex's Pentax 645, which I'm planning on stealing from him, by the way. This camera is absolutely stunning. It's a really beautiful camera. It is a little heavy, but it's fantastic. I had the pleasure of shooting it today, and I'm looking forward to the photos that I took on it. Can't wait to get them developed. I really would recommend it. Especially with the beautiful wide-angle lens that it has on there.
Yes.
I have nothing negative to say about it. It's a really beautiful camera.
Yeah. What was your favorite part about it?
Just shooting with it.
How did it feel in the hands?
I felt really good, actually. I thought it was... It looks big, and I thought for sure, because I have small hands, so I thought for sure I was going to have an issue with it. But no, it was pretty comfortable.
Yep. And the weight wasn't too bad?
It was a little heavy, but no, with the neck strap that Alex has on it, which is the cross strap, it was quite comfortable.
Nice.
So you could take it out for a while and
oh yeah,
not have to worry
definitely,
about it.
Definitely, definitely.
Oh, nice. Just looking at it, I mean, I just had a quick little brief little check with it when Don was shooting with it. And I like the fact that if you're trying to get into medium format and you don't really understand how to use a light meter or you don't have a light meter, I like that everything's built in. I mean, it's how you have basically everything auto other than focus. It's like, how much better can you get? A medium format camera that is literally auto everything.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And actually, for someone with glasses such as myself, it was actually pretty easy to focus as well, which was really good. Because some cameras aren't... Whenever you have glasses.
So. I like the, when I look through the viewfinder, I like the split image rangefinder that it has in it. It's a really, really nice design. It's opposed to the matte screen that I have seen in other cameras. Like the unfortunate accident camera that we had. That one which just has a matte screen. It's not too bad to focus with, but I like the split image. And that's one of the things I did with my my Rollercord was when I changed the screen, I got the split image. Mm-hmm. I really do like that.
Yeah, no, the Pentax 645 is really my workhorse medium format camera. It's the one that comes out the most, mostly because I have several lens choices for it. And the fact that it's completely integrated, you don't have to swap out anything. It's got the built-in drive, built-in meter, built-in eye level finder. Just makes it an absolute pleasure to shoot, which is why I brought
totally
it, because it would just be accessible for anyone on any level. And if you're looking at getting one, the Pentax 645 series is really the underdog. A lot of people go for the Bronica ETRS series or the Mamiya M645. And I'm not saying those are bad cameras. It's just you don't always get everything you want all at once. And it often costs more to buy the additional accessories. This one, you pick it up and you're good to go. You just have to find the lenses. Mm-hmm. And even the lenses are cheap these days. And if you want to add autofocus to it, you can get the 645N and N2. And apparently these lenses will work on the 645 digital lines from Pentax as well. Don't quote me on that. We are still a film podcast, not a digital one. So moving right along, Mike got to shoot a beast of a Mamiya.
I got to shoot the Mamiya Universal Press. Having seen it before in John's collection, I was actually really surprised when he brought it out, to be perfectly honest with you. I managed to score off him his Baby Speed graphic, which was kind of... Yes, it's Donna's, absolutely. The cameras are kind of similar in the fact that they take the interchangeable backs, which is nice. It's 6x9, 6x45, 6x6, 6x7. You get the idea. But the one thing I must say I really like about this one is the rangefinder on it. It is fantastic. I mean, for one thing, the rangefinder is a lot easier to look through because it's not off to the side of the camera. You don't have the big back sticking in your face as you're trying to look through. It's actually really well designed. It's really well proportioned. It's fairly, considering the size of the camera, lightweight. It's a lot lighter than the Baby Speed, that's for certain. And it's a lot simpler to use. You don't have to worry too much. I guess maybe it's because he's got the action trigger on it, but you don't have to fiddle too much with the shutter on it. But of course, then again, that could also be because he's got the action grip on it. But I really liked it. I'm very, very impressed with this camera all around. If you're looking for a camera that has fully interchangeable backs and you don't want to have like a whole bunch of different kit to deal with as far as going from 6x45 all the way up to 6x9 or multiple cameras for it, this is probably a really good choice. It's good. I really like it.
Now,
thanks,
John. You
can
also get a Polaroid back for those, can't you?
Yeah, in fact, that's what I originally had this back, but I sold it because I don't use it anymore. This camera, like it was originally available with, you get the 127mm lens, which is not mounted on it right now. And it was, that lens had the increased coverage so you could shoot full frame on the pack film.
Oh, wow.
Which
cool.
You can't on an RZ67
or a Hasselblad.
Or a Hasselblad. It is a camera you sort of have to get into a process to shoot. Like it's in a way, I always found like with, let's say if you're shooting view camera, you have to get the steps down and do things exactly the same way every time. Because like, for example, you can get a fancy, very, very expensive back that has an interlock, but the shutter you have to cock manually. That's not connected to the film advance. Yeah. The film advance is, you have to do a little thing on the back of the of the film back.
You have There's to release the latch.
Yes.
Pull it twice.
There are a lot of manual steps, but it's you also have to remember to take out the dark slide. There is no interlock. This
right.
This camera will happily let you shoot a blank roll of film.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. There was also the same on the Baby Speed.
Yes, the Baby Speed is the same.
I went out for the Santa Claus Parade, and I shot 8 or 7 frames of Rialla 100.
Oh, no.
And, well, I had already shot a frame previously. I got to the 8th frame, took the picture. As soon as I went to advance the frame, I just kind of glanced out of the corner of my eye and I saw the dark slide was still in. So I basically just blew 7 frames on this film. Thankfully, I noticed that at the time, so I was able to rewind the film in a dark bag and redo it again. But basically, all those shots that I had lined up, you know, the one of the UFO landing and Elvis coming back, I missed those again.
Now, how did that feel in your hands whenever you were carrying it?
Actually, probably because of the speed grip, I found it really comfortable. I didn't find it was too much weight. Now,
really? Because it looks so big.
It's a large camera. It's not the biggest 6x9 out there, but you know it has, and you'll see the pictures in the show notes. It looks like a press camera because it really is a press camera.
Yep.
And I find like once you get into the habit of taking the dark slide out, learning how the shutter interlock and all that stuff works, then you can shoot very quickly with it. And one, I guess my favorite thing about it is the fact that the negative, like the 6x9 negative, there's just so much real estate there.
Oh, you can't beat a 6x9.
Yes. It's the next best thing to shooting a 4x5 view camera.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That you can shoot a week ago or so. I was doing a testing, a development regimen for developing Delta 3200. You right. know, and you can't even shoot that film in 3200 at 35 millimeter because it's just grainy. But I shot it at 1600, used PyroCAD HD to develop. And the 6x9 negatives are, like, it's not Panatomic X or Pan F or anything like that, but it is still very, very usable. So yeah. having that large negative gives you that flexibility to use faster, grainier film stocks or to develop in Rodinal. Which, you know, for increased sharpness, and you can live with the increased grain because it's not going to be a problem in 6x9.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Rodinal is my go-to when it comes to 4x5 and and medium format, especially 6x6 and larger. Yeah. Definitely Rodinal.
Absolutely. And the final camera actually came from Donna and was a bit of a blast from the past for me. It was a Lubitel 2. So we're talking Russian twin lens reflex camera here. And it was actually my first TLR was a Lubitel 2. I eventually gave it away to the Film Photography Podcast. I think it ended up in Australia or Seattle or Washington. I don't know. Whatever. But I actually really like the camera.
I love it.
I really, really do. It really... Sometimes it's nice to go back to simple.
Yep.
Right?
It's not heavy either. It's very small, very compact.
Absolutely.
It's
lightweight. It feels good around the neck. And yeah, the focusing is a bit weird.
It is.
But, you know, once I figured out how to see that little dark circle and get it into focus, it was actually really nice. It's definitely a unique look from the lens, especially, and because we were shooting on a dull day on 100 speed film, I did a lot of shooting wide open, so it has a nice swirl effect to the out of focus areas. Definitely, I highly recommend the camera, especially if people want to get into a little more of the Lomo look and not buy the plastic stuff. I mean, we're talking a metal camera, glass lens. You just have to really watch out on that focusing because it is a geared wheel. The one that I had was rough. Okay. It was really, really rough, hard to focus. So I would often end up with abrasions on my fingers after doing it. But no, it highly recommend it. One of the best cameras out of the Lomo factory that I like to use.
I have to agree with you. Like it's a really, really nice camera. And I mean the lens is just beautiful.
I mean,
you can't. I shot a few images on color film. I shot black and white with it, but I was actually really impressed. You actually get a fair amount of contrast on color film. Now, of course, I have made the mistake of leaving the filter on it, which that's speaking of filters. That's one thing I really like about that camera is the fact that it has a built-on filter holder.
Yes.
And on that one particular.
Neat. It's got red and yellow in the back of it.
It does. Yeah. We've got both the red filter and a yellow filter inside the camera. So if you're ever out shooting and you just want a little bit of, and you want to add some filter to your
bump
coffee.
Bump up the contrast. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Just today was not the day for filters.
It's an inexpensive camera and you get beautiful photos with it. So anyone looking for an inexpensive camera that takes decent pictures, that's...
Absolutely. Nice entry into medium format as well. You just have to either carry a meter or shoot 2016 or just guess.
Yeah.
Meter
might be your best bet.
Yeah. Well, I was metering and guessing at the same time today. So our fourth camera, which we've now dubbed the Ricoh DOA Accord.
The Diet Accord.
We managed to get it to work once. So, unfortunately, we didn't have a camera for John, but John actually got back a camera that he has mentioned on the show before. So, we're just going to let him talk about this absolutely beautiful 1940s.
This is a 1944. Yeah. This is a Kodak Medalist 1. It was put out by Kodak, obviously, almost to be like almost like a large format competitor to Leica, and very much a wartime camera, very popular with the U.S. Navy for some reason. It also shoots 6x9 negatives, So everything we were saying before about 6x9 applies here. The one thing about the Kodak Medalist 1 and its successor, the Kodak Medalist 2, is it is not a 120 camera, it's a 620 camera. You cannot fit 120 spools in this camera. Even the 620s are a fairly tight, it's a fairly tight fit. There are some 620 cameras, like some Brownies, you can stuff a 120 in.
Yeah, the Hawkeye flash you can.
Yep.
But not this one. But the thing is, it's not such a big deal. You can go and buy 620 film, you can pay a premium for it, or you get a few spools and you can just roll your own in a darkroom or a changing bag. And I find the trick is that you start off with, you need the roll of film on 120 and two, count them, two 620 spools, because what you do is in the dark, you roll it onto one 620 spool and then you wind it back onto the second 620 spool. Yeah. And because the two spools are the same thickness, you don't get the problem with the film bulging at the end and having to reposition the tape.
Right.
It just goes, that the only trick is getting the loose end of the film.
Yeah.
You practice it a couple of times. It's really not that big a deal. And practice, so now
perfect.
I can use any film stock that's available in 120. Doesn't matter how esoteric or fancy it is. As long as I have some spare 620 spools, I can use any 120 film I like. It has a Ektar lens, absolutely amazing lens. Interesting to focus, it has like a combination viewfinder where you have the viewfinder is in the top, and then in the bottom of the window you have a military style split image viewfinder, but it's not combined, so you're sort of looking up and down. It takes some getting used to. You get used to it, and you can take some great shots with it. If you're in the market for one, again, there are two models. There's the Kodak Medalist 1, which I have, and the Kodak Medalist 2. Now, if you're given a choice, I would go for the Kodak Medalist 2, not because it'll take better pictures. Well, the lens, Kodak Medalist 1 lens only has interior surface coating. Okay. Medalist 2 lens has exterior coating as well. Just the main thing for the Kodak Medalist 2 is that they fixed a couple of engineering design flaws. Like, for example, I'm pointing at this little thing here. This is what we like to call a shutter jammer device. You move this, it's actually for long exposures, but if you use it, it'll jam the shutter very, very easily. The guy in the States who's sort of the Medalist guy, Ken Ruth, who does Medalist repairs, says, don't use it. So like there are a couple of things with the Kodak Medalist 1. You have to be careful. It's not a toy. But if you use it properly, I think you'll get amazing pictures. I just got it back. It was sent for some repair work, and I'm very happy to have it back. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say it's popular with the U.S. Navy, and I can see why, because this is a bulky camera. It's designed for people. You could probably use this while wearing gloves quite easily.
Oh, probably.
Like if you're out on the deck of a ship escorting convoys across the North Atlantic.
It looks like it'd stop a bullet.
Probably could. I also think it's interesting the focusing mechanism, the helical focus, is very similar to what they've put onto the Travel Wide, the point and shoot 4x5 camera that got successfully kickstarted and they're finally starting to ship. So
it looks very, what's the steampunk-ish.
Yes, that would fit in quite well at a steampunk event.
I do like cameras that have a gadget look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing that's interesting about this, given the shape of the body, it reminds me of the bigger brother of a Bolsey B2.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yes.
Because it has sort of that triangular shape.
Now, how do you feel? How's it feel in your hands when you're... Just because it doesn't look like there's much to really hold on to?
It is a trick. Ergonomically, it is not a perfect camera. I find the shutter travel is long and uneven. And I find, pardon me, this is the best finger.
He's holding up the middle finger, by the way,
I'm holding
folks.
Up the Toronto driver finger.
Really? I thought it was the New Jersey horn.
Well, it's very flexible and versatile. It's not something for running. It's not a running gun camera, in my opinion.
Right.
What I have done is I've ordered a cheap L bracket, like a flash bracket. Yep. And what I'll do is when I get it, I have a cable release. I'll just set it up so that I can get a thumb release from an L bracket in a way sort of similar to how the Universal is set up. And once I have that, that'll make it a much easier camera to use. And that's just like an investment of $30.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all, actually.
But again, if you are going to buy one, make sure you can try it first to make sure that it's the shutter's not jammed. And if you can, go for the Kodak Medalist 2. Although if you see a Medalist 1 and it looks in good shape, no reason not to pull a trigger. Just read the manual, read up on it, and learn how to use it.
Right.
Like any camera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember when I got the chance to use it, and it's a fantastic little camera to use. Well, little in some aspect sense of it. I mean, compared to the one I was using today, the Mamiya Press, which is quite marginally bigger, which is surprising. But no, it's great. I thought it was fantastic, and the Ektar lens is just super sharp.
Yeah, and that's about. Wraps up the camera talk. Now, this month we actually have a special guest on the show. John was able to get in touch with the gentleman who runs Argentix over in Quebec.
Jacques Brodeur.
There we go. Oui, oui.
Yeah, and before I roll the audio, recorded it about a week or so ago, I've got to say, it's great having a dealer who is north of the border. Because there are certain things, certain chemicals that a lot of companies in the States don't want to ship to Canada, specifically things, you know, certain kinds of color chemistry.
Yeah.
E6.
Yeah, C4. Liquid.
Yeah,
anything. I mean, the FPP will ship it north of the border. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they do it, but they do.
Bless the FPP. And hey, looking for 620 spools? FPP has them too.
Yep.
But you know, it's good to have FTP. It's also good to have someone on the Canadian side of the border.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, absolutely.
It is.
Yeah.
And so maybe without further ado, here's my conversation.
Okay, tonight we have Jacques Brodeur of Argentix.ca on the show. And Jacques, how long have you been running your photography supply operation?
Okay, technically speaking, the website came online on April 2012. So this is when the first pages appear on the web. Already 3 years.
And did you get customers right away?
Oh, no, it was very quiet at the beginning. I'm not the one who will push on marketing if I'm not sure of what's going on after that. I mainly advertised on eBay at that time, and eBay has a very good search engine, and the product became spread at large in a quite short time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the main and the first advertisement I did at that point. And with time going on, I realized that the website began to be known by itself and getting more and more visits on a daily basis. So now I can say that at the beginning, I was 100% eBay sales and 0% direct website. And now I can twist the numbers around 80% direct sales and 20% eBay.
Now, as much as we might wish otherwise, the film photography market is not as big as it used to be. There's not as many sellers or makers of film or photo paper or chemicals as there used to be. Is it hard for you to get inventory or products for your online store?
No, the problem is not to get the material in stock to advertise on the website. It's not that the problem. I don't know if you remember when you were a kid, you know, jumping on your bike, heading to the candy store, all the droolings that came with. It's exactly the same things now when I'm screening the web pages of my supplier. There are so much other items I would like to have, but I must go on the safe way, make sure that I'm not overstocking and ending up with the stock drying down on the shelves.
Now, when you order things for, you know, from your distributors, your suppliers, are there some things that are chronically always hard to get?
Not really, I would say. No, not really. Some items may be back ordered due to production issues or things like that. I remember that I already waited kind of 2 weeks to get a 20 by 24 inches for my paper. But no, I cannot tell you that any specific item is harder to get in terms of availability or willingness of the supplier to send it.
Okay, and the suppliers that you deal with, do you get the sense that they still want to be in business, that they're enthusiastic about photography, or do you get a sense that some of them are sort of winding down?
I would think that, to answer this question properly, there are different mindsets. I feel that my foreign suppliers are still involved and engaged in keeping the film photography alive. And I cannot say exactly the same from the domestic suppliers. I say, like, I do some purchases at Adox in Germany, and they are engaged. They try to be at the top notch of their product to make sure that the silver-based photography stays alive and well. Staying alive, but being connected to a machine is not interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you find, I guess, some other suppliers aren't dedicated as much or enthusiastic?
I must assume that the domestic suppliers are kind of looking this part of the photography as a side dish or things like that.
What are some of your most popular products?
Oh boy! I took the time to screen my database to get this answer. The top product of the line is the C41 powder developer. This is really the top of the line seller. Followed by E6 products. After that, we're going down to black and white films, some more chemicals. But in the top 15s. I can tell that this is related to color photography.
That's really interesting. I had no idea. Now, I know, since, you know, I've full disclosure, I'm a customer of yours. I've bought the E6 chemistry a few times and some C41. I got to say, it's really nice to have a supplier in Canada, because for a lot of these chemicals and supplies, the U.S. just will not ship them across the border.
Yeah, due to some shipping restrictions and things like that. I understand that the stuff I'm selling is coming from the U.S. I'm not going to disclose my trade secret. How I take this stock down on our side of the border. But yes, John, you are a customer of mine, and I can see that your first purchase dated October 25th, 2014.
Like I said, it's really, really neat that to see the C41, especially, and the E6 as well, because, of course, even in a large city like Toronto, it is very, very difficult to find a lab that will still do E6. I think there might be one, and then you end up waiting for weeks.
And if you say that for Toronto, don't even think what it is. Downtown Montreal, there's not much left either. And Quebec City, I think the last one went away a few months ago. And it was not a high-volume operation either.
Now, are there any processes or supplies that you would that you're either like thinking of stocking but can't find, or it's just not worth it? Like, I'm wondering, one thing I would love to try sometime is wet plate, but it's, from my understanding, it's almost impossible to get the materials in Canada.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. It comes from your episode 6, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I took a few minutes to listen to all those episodes. Found it very interesting, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And, yeah, if you can provide me a kind of list of the items required, I can take a look at that. I remember that it was some issues about silver nitrates, which I can get here anyway.
And I think there's also something called gun cotton, which I forget what kind of chemistry. It's something nasty, and of course it has the word gun in it. So yeah. It would probably scare.
Somewhere in a blacklist at the custom office.
Well, I think if you buy photography chemicals, you end up in a list somewhere. I'm sure I'm on a list.
Yeah, so if you have a list, send it to me. I would take a look at that. It's not a problem.
I was going to ask about film. Do you get to hear like any rumors about, you know, we're always worried about companies going out of the film business. Any inside scoop? Like, I'm hoping that selfishly Raleigh stays in business because I just love their ADS film, and I'd probably start crying if that ever went out of production.
As of now, I have no information that this can go down the drain. So it's still a stable product, still available off the shelves. But I've heard something in the forum somewhere about a Fuji, which looks to raise the price and cut the production of some type of films. I don't remember exactly which one it was. So this is another sad news. Now the saddest news I had, just like that, was when the FK machinery went down.
Yeah.
I was pretty sad when this happened because their film was a pure product. It was a very interesting product, and alas, the machinery gone down and the beyond economical repair. But after that, I cannot lie to you. I have no idea if someone is going to go down right next month or things like that. I'm not aware of yet.
It's too bad, yes, that FK went down. I remember I tried a couple of rolls of their Aura 820 infrared film.
Yeah. Without the the back coating, because the Aura, it was wonderful film. It might be frightening when you drop the developer in the drain to see what color went off this film, but it was the hell of a nice film.
Yeah, it's interesting, like the color of the developer from various films. I know in the Fomapan 100 in medium format, it comes out a bright green.
Yeah, sometimes it's surprising.
Yeah, well, the first time I developed the Fomapan 100, I didn't know what to expect, so I saw this bright green coming out of the tank, and I was wondering, what the heck is that? Or sometimes, like the T-Max films, if you let them stand develop, you get a very, very dark purple that comes out.
It's quite special.
Now, tell me about some of your, like, the makeup of your customers. Is it mainly Canadian, or do you get a lot of international interest?
I've got international interest. If you ever have time to do so, if you go on the website, you can see at the bottom of the main page, there is a link. This link states, if you are curious to see where our products are shipped, only have to click here for the map. So you will get the idea exactly where I already shipped product. Since 2012, I keep a track of all those shipping. So, of course, if I ship something to you 3, 4, 5 times, I'm not going to add another star at that place just to show that. So this is one place, one spot, whatever the amount of shipping is done. But I have some interest mainly in Canada. I must admit that the main base is Canadian. After that, I've got some American from United States. I've got the northern place is something in Groenland, Ilulissat in Groenland. This is the northernmost place where I've shipped items there. But there are items to Russia, to Australia, South Africa, South America. The only place could be like a rough part of Kazakhstan, Mongolia, Afghanistan, those places, India. I've not been sent item there too. But you can, if you take a look at the map, you can see the distribution of the shipping and the customer base.
What made you decide to do this as a business?
Okay, as previously stated, started in 2012. 2012 is some kind of 10 years later. After I took a look at my favorite photo store and realized that anything that looked like Silver Bays was phased out. at that time there is a kind of psychosis, and the film was going to die, and digital is the future, and things like that. So it took, yes, 10 years before I decided to dive in seriously, and I have absolutely no regret.
And are you like a one-person operation?
Yes, one-person operation.
And are you able to do this, is it a full-time job at this point?
I hope in 2 or 3 years it will become a full-time job.
Now, when you buy some of the your stock, do you have any issues like minimum orders? Like, do you find yourself having to buy things by the case or the crate?
Yes, if you go by limited quantities, minimum order is a fact. Mm-hmm. Let's start with that for some domestic and foreign suppliers. But it's not the majority of. If I want to purchase just 10 films from Germany, I can get those 10 films. Doesn't mean that once the film are here with the shipping costs and all that, it's worth it. But no, I'm not strictly limited to minimum orders on all my suppliers.
So you must have a big, like, do you have like a warehouse or storage facility somewhere to store all your stock?
Yes, that's a fact. I'm stuck most of them in my office, and I need a few other closets to make sure that things are properly stocked.
Is there one thing that it's more or less impossible to get that you wish you could get for your store?
Technically speaking, there are some other things I'd like to have. But we end up with the same problem that if you try to purchase indicator stop bat. Even if I have those items on hand, they cannot be shipped by mail. Mm-hmm. Due to inflammability, due to flash point of the product and things like that. Those two informations are the base of do I ship or not. Is it flammable? And is there any flashpoint on this product? Technically speaking, the content in chemical of a diluted concentrate is not an issue at the postal facility. But the fact that it could catch on fire is, yes, this is a major issue. I won't risk anything at that point. So even if I have this material, I wouldn't be able to ship it by mail. I could always ship it via UPS or FedEx and things like that, but prepare to get the tenfold shipping charges.
Oh, yeah. I made the mistake once of ordering something from eBay, having it shipped by courier instead of the postal service, and I was in shock.
It's a serious issue. And I'm not sure that it's worth the safety to do so if you are not sure of the volume you will get.
Now, do you ever get people asking for weird film sizes?
The weirdest thing I have heard, and which in itself isn't that weird, was for X-ray film.
Mm-hmm.
It was an 8 by 10 inches X-ray film. Technically speaking, it's nothing exotic. It's something that can be found, not in Canada. I've sent a quote for my German supplier that items, and the 8 by 10 format is kind of import or export protected. There is some kind of exclusive distribution in Canada on this film in this size. So I'm not going to enter a war at the Tribunal du Commerce. I have no interest in that. But I could get this X-ray film in matrix size without any problem. But the 8x10, forget it.
I'm also thinking of, I just recently got a Kodak Medalist back from repair, and it takes 620 film. So I've been doing a lot of re-spooling from 120. And I also won a mid-1930s Kodak Bantam, which takes 828 film, which is really weird.
This kind of format has not been asked for yet.
Some stuff, like, you can cut down, think I've made 127 film from 120 before, but it's interesting that there is still a market for some of these odd-sized films, just a small one.
Yeah, maybe if I scratch some information, could get something on that, but I'm not sure at all.
Every now and then, I think I could go into business re-spooling 120 film, because one thing I've noticed online is that 620 film is still available, but it tends to be very expensive.
Yeah, of course, if the, how do they say that in English, l'offre et la demande, the basic principle of business, if nobody asks for, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah. My last question for you, what future plans do you have for your online store and your operation?
Oh, plans. Plan A would be to be able to be full-time on it. In my wildest dreams, I even checked out if it wouldn't be possible to process C41 or E6, but I'm already running out of time, so I don't know exactly when between 1 and 2 a.m. I would be doing that.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so it could be a little stressing doing so, but it was part of the plan. Still on the radar, but not sure at all. Really not sure. Even farther on the radar would be a kind of large format printing for digital films. A kind of that if you need, say, 24 by 24, or whatever the size, you send me the scanned information, I send it to the printer, have it printed, and ship it back to you, no? But it would be very specific for large size printout. But it's another thing that's on the other street. It's not on the corner right now.
And maybe I will ask just one more question. Do you still find time to do photography for yourself?
Hardly.
Oh, dear.
But I still happen and success in getting more, not more, but sometimes in my dark room. I've realized that I'm still two vacation backlog on my black and white film on the East Coast. So it's roughly 18 months that the films have been shoot and expecting me to drip them in the developer. But I have the time to work after and on some older negatives I have, but not the time I'd like to put on.
What's your favorite camera?
I mainly work with 35mm camera. I have one Vietnam-era Nikon, good old stuff, full manual. I've got a Canon EOS, mm-hmm. and... the latest baby I purchased it because, as you might figure out, with the digital things, the good old cameras are now available at sometimes not extra cheap, but at a very affordable price. So I found a F3 HP with the MD4 motor drive. This equipment was in a hospital laboratory somewhere in the West, and it never saw the sun before I got it out. It was very close to a pristine condition. It works like a charm and kind of a good workhorse.
Oh, Jacques, thank you very much for being on the show.
Hey, but thank you for your time calling me, and keep on your good job.
Thank you.
Well, that was absolutely fantastic. And a big thank you to Jacques for taking some time out to talk with John. And thank you for John for arranging that interview. And that's about wraps it up for this show. Probably a little shorter than normal, but hey, you know what? What can you do? We'll be back next month, so stay tuned for that. And until next time, my name's Alex Laux.
I'm John Meadows. Keep your finger busy.
I'm Donna Bataxi. Keep that film rolling.
I'm Mike Bataxi, and these guys are bananas.
Keep your powder dry, boys.